Hey, Jake here, and we got to pay some bills over here at 3 Point Perspective podcast. So this episode is sponsored by svslearn.com. It's an online learning platform we created because we all taught at art schools and realized you could get the same level of education without the enormous price tag. With courses from the three of us and dozens of other published illustrators, SVS Learn is the best way to get an art school education at your own pace and for a fraction of the cost. Start your free 30-day trial today at svslearn.com/3point. Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3 Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators. We've all illustrated for all the major publishers. Together, we've published somewhere around 75 books, children's books, and we've all taught illustration at universities.
Each week, we come at you guys with different listener questions, and we try to answer as best we can with all of our vast levels, years of experience. Sometimes we argue, sometimes we agree. Do we ever agree? But each time
more
you
often
learn
than
something
not.
Brand new.
More often than not, it's going to be a pretty agreeable
brand spanking new.
Brand spanking new. You're going to learn something brand spanking new, maybe.
Okay, before we get into the questions, I want to re-emphasize. We had briefly mentioned this before, but Lee has an email problem. Okay, right now he sent me a text showing. I tried to send him an email. He's like, "I didn't see it. I didn't get your email. What's going on?" And previously the day before, he told me he has 6,600 plus unread emails in his inbox. So no wonder he didn't get my email. It's lost in this ocean of emails there. And so yeah. My advice to him, and this is to everybody out there. You know, we're into this new year. If you haven't done it already, it's time to declare email bankruptcy. Take all those emails, put them in a folder, and just say 2021 email bankruptcy, and then start fresh. And it is, I do this every year. It is the most wonderful thing.
You just sweep them under the rug, basically.
You go through,
and you know what happens is I get your mail. I get people that email me going, "Hey, Jake won't email me back. Can you get a hold of him for me?"
Well,
and I'm not getting paid for that, by the way.
Well, I'll tell you this. Another little cathartic thing was I started 6 weeks ago when I moved and I started remodeling this house. I said, I'm not going to open any emails and I'm not going to open any regular mail either. And so now,
to the world.
Yeah, I just stopped. I just said, you know what? I'm not going to do it. And God, it felt so good for a while. And now I looked at the stack of regular mail. I mean, this includes bills and, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, just a huge stack. And now I'm going through them and I'm paying all these late fees and stuff.
Well, but you know, it's an expensive decision, right?
It's so stupid. No, but here's my decision. And I'll throw, this is my little tidbit of advice in this whole bad advice segment. You got to focus on something. And sometimes I just said, you know what? I'm not going to focus on anything else other than what I'm doing right now. And that's what I did. It felt good.
Yeah. No, there's something to that. And that's sort of been my thing for this year is, and I talked the talk last year. This year, I'm going to walk the walk. And the talk is you really do clear out your mornings for creative work. And you don't let anything creep into that. You schedule phone calls and meetings in the afternoons. You don't check your inbox until noon. And you do the creative work one drip at a time. You just chisel away at it, right? And eventually the creative work will get made and happen. And all this other stuff, all this other, like these fires that need to get put out, they're going to get solved. Problems are going to get solved. The work expands or contracts to the amount of time you have to give it. So you leave your afternoons to handling the emails and the administrative stuff and the bill paying and all that stuff. When you're more likely, for me personally, in the afternoon is when I am tapped out creatively. Mm-hmm. And that's when I slink away to social media or to YouTube videos or to you know, wandering around the house and snacking and things like that.
Good idea.
And, but if I know, like, oh shoot, I've got an inbox I need to check. I've got a meeting I have to go to, a call I have to do. I'll be present. I'll be able to do those things, and they'll get done. And I still have had a morning where I created something. Something exists that didn't exist before. So
I'm picturing you slinking.
slinking away. Around the house. Yeah. It's like a slinky. Just kind of,
whatever. Are you waking up early for this creative work, or are you just on your normal schedule? What are you doing?
So far this year, I've been getting up early and doing it before the kids get up, and then pausing to like get everybody breakfast and out the door, and then resuming it, and then doing my workouts in between creative work and administrative work.
That was my tip to you, right? When you do the 4-hour block and then do your workout and then do it. Yeah, it's good.
Yep. Pulled that from Lee. I don't know what I'm going to do in the summer though in Arizona, because working out, I like to run, and our weights and the whole setup is in the garage, and it's just too hot in the middle of the day. It's even too hot in the morning sometimes. Wow. But there's a rec center up the street from me, like 2 miles away. So I think I'm going to maintain this and just go to the rec center when it's too hot.
I'm trying to talk into moving to Colorado. So we're all in the same spot. We're going to open a physical location, and then you don't have to deal with those summers.
That's right. That's right.
August, me and Will can go snowboarding. Get Jake into snowboarding.
Yeah, Jake, you need to get into snowboarding.
I know how to snowboard, and I do it when I can, but it's not going to be a thing that takes over my life. I can't afford that right now.
To make the right decisions.
Maybe we should have a podcast.
A snowboarding podcast?
No, like an art podcast.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's do it.
Okay, here we go. First question, was Lee White a voice actor? Hi, guys. Love the show. This comes in from Craig from the UK. Really inspiring stuff. This actually isn't a question. I just wanted to bring it up. Now, this is more of a statement than a question. As I've listened to the podcast, I've often felt I recognize Lee's voice from somewhere, but can never put my finger on it. I was watching Gargoyles with my daughter today and realized immediately who Lee reminds me of, Lexington. So he says, that's all, folks. Keep up the great work.
I'm scared to check out Lexington because I realize I do not have the Will Terry smooth voice. You know, and I don't have the Jake normal guy voice. I've got this like weird hybrid voice that's just kind of all over the place.
You didn't voice Lexington in the 90s cartoon Gargoyles.
No, I did.
Okay. Okay, good.
No, I didn't.
Okay, first real question. This comes in from Javon, Encroaching College Crossroads. Hey guys, I'm emailing to ask a question about whether attending an art school is a good option for me. I'm a high school student halfway through my junior year, and I'm coming up to a point where I have to decide on what I have to do once I graduate. I've always had an interest in art and aspirations to enter the field. However, I'm not confident enough in my skills and drive to go to an art school and eventually make art in a work environment. Here's my question. Is it smart to take a risk and go to art school, or would it be better to go to college for something more generic and later sharpen my skills and explore art-related opportunities once I've got a solid job? Thanks for the podcast and the advice. What do you guys think?
This is such a good one. It's a question that everybody has when they're young.
Yeah.
You know, I want to look into we all want to look into that crystal ball and see, like, you know, what's the best option and where am I going to find the most success? The thing that to remember is that, we know people personally who have gone every route you can imagine to success in art. And some of them have gotten full on careers. Professional careers, and then gone into art. We're getting ready to interview someone who has a very professional career in the medical world, who's also very accomplished in illustration. So there isn't really an answer to this from my perspective on what you should do. There's what we would consider the safe route, which is to get a job, because for a lot of people, it's hard for them to get work as an artist. However, I know so many people who went the safe route who were like, I should have just done what I should have gone into art like you, because that's what I really wanted to do. And now I'm struggling to try to figure out how to get there. And it's really hard now. It would have been a lot easier if I had done it when I was young. So
I have a ton of advice here.
You're going to disagree with Will.
I am going to disagree with Will a little bit. I think there's a middle ground here that hasn't really been talked about, but there's one thing about the question that needs to be broken down. It says, I'm not confident enough in my skills and drive to go to an art school and eventually make art in a work environment. If you said, I'm not confident in my skills, but you have the drive, I don't know. That's the one answer.
Yeah.
Not having the drive is the bigger problem. The skills can always be attained. I don't care. If you have the drive, I mean, that's what art school is for. Everybody's like, oh, I'm not good enough to go to art school. Art school is for that. That's what it's right. for. It's building up right. the skills. And believe me, you don't have to have a ton of skill to get into an art school, despite what it feels like in high school. And you think everybody's a great artist in college. They're not. They're struggling with the same stuff that everybody does in the beginning. But even without the skills and the drive, my advice to this person would be, it sounds like you're not ready to make a decision either way yet. And so I wonder if postponing this, like taking a year, working a jobby job, you know, whatever, doing like Uber or something, and taking some art classes and seeing if there's more clarity at the end of a year. What I hate right now for young people is the, and parents do this a lot to their kids, is like the forced choice. You just graduated from high school and now you got to go to college. Oh crap. Well, what do? I got to pick this path that now you're going to study for 4 years and then eventually be either pushed into some career you don't want or then have to diverge and change careers later where it's really difficult. So postpone this decision if you're not ready to make it either direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that drive is a key factor here. I would say you're going to get into, say you do pick art school, you're going to get into that. Everyone there has this, you know, the same, they feel like they're maybe an imposter or something. There's going to be one or two kids who are like super good, amazing. And everyone's going to be like, oh man, they've got it all figured out. And even those kids are like,
those kids don't make it.
They're like,
but they really don't. Most of the time, those guys don't. Sometimes they do.
That's true.
But a lot of times those guys are big fish in a small pond and they don't value what they have and they don't work hard. They relax. Yeah. And then when the going gets tough, they just kind of wither away. I've seen that so many times.
Here's the advice I would give you. So I have a kid who's in his 20s now. And my advice I kept giving him, and he wasn't good in school, didn't have good grades. He wasn't super driven to like do college or school or anything like that. And, what the advice I gave him was just make stuff, just every day, make something, work on your art and make something. 'Cause he loved to draw. And so all he did throughout all high school for 4 years straight was pretty much made a comic strip every single day. And not all of them were great, but every once in a while one was like really good. And he would post them on his Instagram account, and he made what ended up being like 100+ really pretty good comics and a bunch of ones that were okay. He even made one that became a meme. Like it went on to become like a worldwide meme that people have used, but that wouldn't have happened if he wasn't just like if he was stressing out and worrying about, oh, what do I do? How do I do it? The other thing I saw with him doing these daily comic strips is he actually got better at his art. He got better at like thinking through ideas, you know, making and finishing a thing, and his drawing got good too. And then at the end of, after he graduated, I worked with him on, showed him how to like do a Kickstarter, run and launch a Kickstarter. And we collected all of his drawings in a book and made a Kickstarter video and put it all together, and I showed him the whole process, and the book funded, and he didn't sell a ton of them, and we still have a ton of these books in the storage unit, but he made a book, a finished product that he put out in the world, and it's sort of like you know, this accomplishment. It gave him this feeling of like, yeah, I can do something. Is he the greatest artist? No. Is he a really good artist? I love his stuff. His style is amazing. It's really developed. And has he gone on to art school yet? No. Right now he's doing a service mission for our church. And what's cool about that is he's in these situations where he's learning about life and the world and like real people with real problems. And that I think is going to end up helping him more than just running into an art school right away. You know, he took mm-hmm. a couple of classes at community college, whatever. The thing you got to remember too is like you're on your own schedule, your own timeline. And the world is going to say, oh, as soon as you graduate, you got to boom, get into college. It's not for everybody. It's not absolutely necessary. You could take a year, you could take 2 years and figure out life and experience things. And like Lee was saying, have a job. You'll learn a ton from working a job, for a year, for a couple of years.
I mean, the cool thing is there's so many jobs that are flexible now that allow mm-hmm. this. Like when we were growing up there, you either, you know, you're part-time or full-time, and that meant mm-hmm. 20 hours a week or 40 hours a week. And now it's, you can work 8 hours, you can work 12, it's on your mm-hmm. own schedule. There's so much that you can do. It's sort of amazing. I didn't start college till I was 30. So you got time.
Yeah, you got time. Right. And what I would do, I'll boil it down to this advice, right? And I like what Will said is like, some people need college. Some people don't need college. Some people go and take a job and wish they hadn't. Some people take the, you know, go chase art and wish they hadn't, you know? So here's my advice to you. Art, being an artist, whether you're an illustrator, whether you're a concept artist, whether you're a filmmaker, whether you are a musician, whatever, it all rests upon you making things. Mm-hmm. And you just have to get into the habit of making and finishing things. So you're halfway through your junior year now. Set a goal that for the next 5 months during this last semester, that each month you'll just have made a piece of art, some sort of thing that you can hand to somebody else. And whether that's a comic, whether it's something you painted, whether it's, you know, but something really like you could put, you know, hand it to someone and point to it and say, this is the thing I made. And see if you liked that process and you liked doing it. And I wouldn't worry about, was I a good artist? I wouldn't worry about, did I get the lighting right or the shadow right? Just worry about making and finishing things. Okay. And then see how that goes. And if you enjoyed that process and you want to do it some more, then this is definitely a thing you should chase and continue throughout your senior year, making art, improving, trying to master it. And then look at art schools that you want to get into and don't pick like, what's the bad art schools? The ones that are just like, the pop-up.
For profit, I mean, go to the best one you can that makes a difference. So community college is not the same as a dedicated college.
Right. If you can afford it, if your parents have some money that they're kicking into this, art school's super expensive. So, and you don't have to go to all 4 years of art school. You can go to 1 year, you can go to 2 years, but find a really cool art school, but then also like supplement whatever that is with online education. Mm-hmm. That's why we started svslearn.com because we saw that there was just some things lacking and things not available to everybody that should be available to everybody. So look at that. Look at places like Schoolism.
So many places.
Look at Dropbox.com.
Let me pipe in with this, that our curriculum at SVS Learn is complete. I mean, we have the same curriculum you would get at an art school.
I think it's more.
And I would argue, too, that, but, you know, without.
Oversell.
Yeah. I mean, like, but the thing is, you can get everything you get in an art school mm-hmm. online. The difference is some people need someone to kind of hold their hand. So ironically, what a lot of people are paying for in art school is the accountability of grades. Mm-hmm. You know, getting, mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what you're paying in some cases, six figures for is accountability because, mm-hmm. Some people won't take, like we have all the classes, right? But if someone does ours, at svslearn.com, they have to have the self-discipline to go through each class and do the assignments and really work hard on their own. Some people can't do that. Some people really need a school to say, you will take this class, you will take this class, you will take this class. Mm-hmm. And here you're going to get a grade. And if you don't show up for class, you're going to get marked down. Grades are going to suffer.
Yeah.
And we don't do that. And some people don't need that.
Right.
Yeah, it's true. That's a good point.
So get some education, make some stuff, and then make that decision whether or not this thing is for you.
One thing I want to add here. I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast, but have I ever told you guys about the ice cream decision?
When you wanted to have an ice cream cone, but you decided not to.
Have to do with art?
It has a lot to do with art. It'll make sense in a second. It's a conversation I was having with my wife the other day. When my kid wants ice cream, mm-hmm. that is like the last time that it's a pure decision. Like if I ask my kid, do you want to get an ice cream cone? The answer will always be enthusiastically yes. There's mm-hmm. no downside to that decision. We go get ice cream and he loves it. So it's just mm-hmm. an easy decision. That's the only time in life, I think, where the decision is clear cut. And that's where I'm going with this is like, I was talking to my wife saying, I wish as an adult, I had the ice cream decision where, do you want to do this thing? 100% yes, no doubt about it. There's no downside. It doesn't happen anymore. There's always like, well, if I do that, then I give up this. Or
yeah, you're
weighing it all out. And I'm like, man, I want one decision as an adult that's just a pure yes. And my point is, you're not going to have it. Even if you wait a year and you take some classes and you do a part-time job, the decision then will not be 100%. The decisions mm-hmm. we make now are not, I'm doing this tarot deck that I'm going to Kickstarter in the spring. I don't know if it's going to work. It's not an ice cream. Mm-hmm. It's not like, yes, it's 100%. It's guaranteed. And that's what I'm doing. And I'm so happy. There's always doubt. And I just want to put that out there because there's never, a lot of times people want to wait until that decision feels like I know exactly what I'm supposed to do. And my point is, it's not coming. You're going to have to weigh and then pick.
Yeah. And that's where integrity lies in. Like I had it explained to me once that integrity is doing the thing you said you'd do after all the feeling has evaporated. like, you know, you may decide, oh, art school, yes, I'm all into it. And then you get into it and you realize like, oh, I have to do assignments. I have to I suck at this.
That's not what I thought it was going to be. Many things.
So it's going to be hard either way. But hopefully that gets you into the right mindset, the right thinking of where you need to be. Sorry, it wasn't like a simple, you should go.
An ice cream decision, yeah. 100% yes.
Another add-on to this is no matter what you do, whatever discipline you're thinking of, there's a line. Imagine a line from the person who's the worst at it in the world to the person that's the best, right? There's a line. Mm-hmm. And when you start on something new, you're somewhere in that line, usually towards the back because you suck, right? Mm-hmm. And every time you switch, you're pretty much going to the end of the line. And I think a lot of young people don't realize that when things start to get a little tough, when they realize they have to start working, they want to switch majors, they want to switch from one thing to another. And I've seen that a lot. And I just think that as a young person, you need to know that are you really wanting to go completely to the back of the line again?
Yeah.
On something new, just something to think about.
You know, working for a living, like doing something for a living has been like an aspect of being a human for the last 10,000 years, right? You like, mm-hmm. you got up and you did something and in return you got food. And you were able to provide for a family or something. It's only the last 50 years where it's like, hey, you could pick something you actually enjoy. And so I think there needs to be like take a step back and think, okay, there's going to be some level of this is just a job and I'm doing it in order to make a living, right? And you have to like find where that threshold is for you. And for some people, man, we're just still talking about this, aren't we? And for some people, it's like, I can handle working this mid-level management position because I've got, you know, good benefits, good insurance, good paycheck. And no, it does not feed my soul. And no, I don't seriously believe in the product that my company makes. But I can then devote the other 40 hours of my week that I'm awake to snowboarding or pinball machines or, you know, whatever it is that you're, you know, mountain biking or whatever, mm-hmm. right? I think, though, if you have an ability to create and to make things, you also run the risk of taking this thing that you love and turning it into like a real chore and taking like all the fun out of it too. So one of the other options here is maybe art is a thing that you do for fun and it gives you everything you need out of life just to do it for fun and not to attach any sort of monetary like value to it. And you take that job that you do for the paycheck and the benefits and the insurance and all that. And that is a perfectly legitimate and a good way to live life. You don't have to do art as a living.
Good deal. Okay,
next one. Becky says, what's in a name? A rose by any other name will still prick. Thank you for your podcast. For those of us who are established in one career and branching into the illustration world, it feels like there is a risk in regard to our names. Which information do we want people to see when they search us? I'm working towards writing and illustrating children's books and in the education field where books live. Do you recommend using your own name as an illustrator? Why or why not? Do you use your given names? Why or why not? How do you determine what name to use if it isn't your own? And what are the benefits of using your own name? Thank you for your honest thoughts. Really quick, I, for many years, my online persona was Agent 44. And that just stemmed from very early, like 2000s internet. I don't know if anybody had the real name on there. Like it was, you sign up for a forum, you get a domain name or whatever, and it's usually, you know, something dumb like Funky Fresh 22 or something, you know, like you just have that online name. Mm-hmm. And at one point I realized like, oh, I do want to get into making actual published works. And on those books, you know, are they going to have the name Agent 44? Or are they going to have the name Jake Parker? And I decided I'd rather have the name, I'd rather be known as Jake Parker than as Agent 44. And so I switched everything. I switched my handles on social media. I switched my website domain name. I switched all these things over to my name because I wanted my name attached to it. Now, there was some thought process because my actual name is Jacob Parker. Mm-hmm. And that's what I went by for the first 21 years of my life was Jacob Parker. And then I switched, yeah. And then when I decided to go into being professionally an artist, I thought, let's simplify this. Let's make it a little bit more, let's eliminate a syllable and make it something that has a little bit more alliteration or not alliteration, but a nice sound to it. So I went Jake Parker and I just stuck with that. And now that's how I introduced myself. That's how everybody who's met me since then calls me. But it's funny to like run into people who I knew in high school. Jacob, how you doing? That's how I know I've known them for a long time. So that was a deliberate decision to do that. So on all my legal documents, you know, contracts, it's Jacob Parker. But my professional name is, I guess, is Jake Parker. And in some instances, it's Mr. Jake Parker because that's my domain name and my Twitter handle as well. But I don't see any problem with you like picking a cool, like catchy name and having that be the name that's on your books and the names that you're known by professionally. And then you have like your normal name that's like personal. I don't see anything wrong with that. What do you guys think?
I think you... We grew up at a time when the internet was brand new. And so for us, it was easy to get our names. I think one thing that a lot of young people are dealing with now is their names taken. Mm-hmm. So they're dealing with that, number one. I think that there's an advantage to having your own name in regards to social media, because when you sign up for a social media account, you have to use your name. So if you're
like for Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, and being able to promote using your own name is an advantage for us. Whereas mm-hmm. if you have a different name on online in other, you know, what you're marketing for is your business name. It could, I mean, obviously you can have a professional Facebook page, but you can't have a personal one that matches it. I don't know if that's a consideration for some people or not. I like that. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely harder. Wouldn't you say it's harder to promote under a different name?
I don't know. Like, have you heard of Andy J Pizza? He's like an illustrator. He's sort of in the same space as us as far as like online and sharing, you know, educational information and stuff. And that's not his last name. That's not his real last name. But pizza's catchy and it's rememberable. And it imply. I mean, do you ever eat a pizza when you're sad? Like, do you ever
all
order?
All the time. That's the only time I eat pizza.
I'm usually crying into my pizza.
I mean, typically, pizza is associated with a party or with a social thing or something like that. And so, it's such a good name. And you know, if he has a book that comes out, or if he has, you know, makes a film or anything, that name Andy J Pizza is going to be on there, and it's memorable and it's catchy. So. My advice here is if you don't like your original name, or if you want to keep some sort of anonymity to your personal life, go knock yourself out and go make your Dr. Seuss name and go for it. But if you don't really care and you're fine with, you know, blurring that line, then use your original name.
Like, if you plan on doing something really embarrassing, it's probably better to have a pseudonym, because then you can just get another one.
Yeah.
Right. Like, not attached to your own name.
So there was a guy who was in Portland that had a catchy little, I guess it was a pseudonym. I'm assuming that his last name wasn't actually Superstar. His name was Brett Superstar. He's an illustrator. Mm-hmm. Pretty funny.
Yeah.
Easy
and
to
remember. You've used, Wheatley, you've used Antonio Blanco.
Antonio Blanco. Yeah. For my landscape stuff. It's fun. You can have fun with it, but you know, it does add complication to it, because as you just heard with Jake's little history, as you go through, you change. I mean, like, me and Will are just who we are, and then we don't have to worry about changing it. So I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Next one. This comes from a person who wished not to be named. They said, hiding behind brands, NDAs, and art directors. Love the podcast, Will. I really enjoyed your art book, Jake. I've been following your career since Flight. And Lee, I'm looking forward to support your tarot deck Kickstarter. So this is a nice. This is a person who's is really nice. Familiar with this. So they say, I studied illustration, and after graduation, I moved into toy design and have had a successful career. Not to brag, but by doing so, I've been able to work on concept art for TV, animation, and feature films. All right, so this guy's really legit. I've recently gone freelance, and I want to build up the illustration side of my business. I'm feeling burnt out, only making blue sky concepts and technical work that is hidden away by NDAs. And it's so NDA, just FYI, stands for non-disclosure. What's the A?
Agreement.
Part? Agreement. There you go. Non-disclosure agreement means that you work on something without promising not to share it, like on social media or on your website or anything like that. So a lot of his work is hidden away by NDAs and is often overly art directed. I want to create work that I can actually show off and hang my hat on. This may be a weird question, but do you have any advice for an artist that struggles to make and show their own original work? Maybe I've been hiding behind big brands and art directors for a while. Also, I struggle making something without the pressure of external deadline. Boy, I can relate to this guy. I can. And while you guys are thinking about it, I'll just say this. Like, I made a deliberate decision in, I think it was 2015 or 2016, that I would not take on any freelance projects that didn't have my name on it. So not even NDA stuff. Like, I decided I was only going to do book projects, either books I kickstarted or books that I that my name would, you know, be displayed on the cover, or I could be attributed to on the back cover or something like that, or to do certain projects where I would be credited in, you know, in credits, so that I could so that it, essentially each of these things could be kind of like a calling card. And I said no to stuff like commercial work, where you design a bunch of concepts for a commercial, the commercial airs, and nobody knows who made it. There's no credits at the end of a commercial. There's no database for who worked on what commercials. And so I started saying no to that. And what happened was, like, my career blossomed in a way where I was doing things a little bit more publicly, and I was sharing things a little bit more publicly, and I was getting work that work from these things because it was more public. So that sort of solved that side of it, the problem of what do I say, you know, what do I work on that gets me more more of this kind of freelance work. The other side of it is, how do I struggle making something without the pressure of an external deadline. I struggled to make and show my original work. You know, it's not art directed. It's coming from within, essentially. So how do you guys do a ton of original work. As far as I know, you don't have, you know, external deadlines coming. You know, there's no external deadline for the tarot deck, Lee. There wasn't an external deadline for your Littles project, Will. What drove you guys to make that? How did you go from having nothing to having something and having it be a success?
What do you think, Will? You've done it more times than I have.
You know, when I read this guy's email, my mind keeps going to the fact that I think his creative energy is being used for the clients that he's working for. Because I don't know, like, and we have our own experiences, right? And for me, I have, I have these ebbs and flows in my life of wanting to produce something really creative. It doesn't happen all the time. It used to more. Mm-hmm. I used to have this hunger, and I think it was more in my 20s and 30s when I couldn't create something that looked like my vision. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'd have a vision up here, and I couldn't achieve that height with what I ended up producing. Mm-hmm. And so it was like this stretching, constantly stretching for this almost unattainable quality I couldn't get to. And then, you know, in my 40s, and I started to be able to get there to what I was, mm-hmm. you know, to where I thought. And now in my 50s, I feel like I can get there pretty much every time if I really mm-hmm. want it.
Your abilities match your vision.
Yeah. And I, and so now it's not as much of a goal to, like, I wonder if I can make something really good. It's what do I want to say, and the things that I work on, I really want to make them count. And the thing that probably the biggest thing that has helped me make the things that I've wanted to make in the last 5 years is saying no to some of the freelance work that I used to take just to pay the bills, because that was sapping my creative energy, mm-hmm. you know? And so from my perspective, I would think that's probably why this person who shall not be named is not already doing his own stuff and putting it out there is that's what I would guess. And so I would say, and it's a tough transition to if you're already working. We've talked to quite a few professionals in the industry. I'm thinking of one right now who is a mutual friend of ours who is kind of a who's who in storyboarding in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know who I'm talking about?
Possibly, and, yeah. I can think of five different people.
Okay, well, this one particular person who went to school in Utah, he has lamented several times that, you know, if not for all the work that he's got to do, he would be working on all these personal projects. And how in the world do you have time to work on personal projects, you know?
Yeah, that applies to the five different people.
Right. And so at some point you have to, I think you have to decide, what do I want to leave in this world? Because, I mean, your life really isn't that long. Mm-hmm. And for me, I really wanted to leave some things that were just mine.
Yeah.
You know, and I have more things that I want to leave. And it doesn't leave room for spending all my energy on client work, which there are stages. We've talked about this before on the podcast. There's stages in your career. And I feel like as you get towards the latter half or the latter third of your career, that's when a lot of illustrators or artists in general really think, what am I going to leave behind? Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. Lee?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think to give yourself deadlines, I think too many artists start to just make the actual artwork without thinking about the overall plan. And I think that's one thing that me and Will have done really well is that we're like, there's always an end kind of goal, whether it's, I'm going to have a gallery show at this gallery. Well, now there's a deadline. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or there's an art show. I need work for that art show. So I need to make something for it. So there's a deadline kind of inherent there. Even making your own stuff that doesn't have a formal deadline, like an art show would, like I'm going to run a Kickstarter. Well, you start talking to a printer to even just figure out, okay, how much does a book cost that I'm going to make? You know, so I'm going to make a book, I'm going to Kickstarter it. And you start talking to a printer, they say, okay, when are you going to print this thing? Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. Now you put it's sort of arbitrary. I'm going to print it on March 17th. Well, now there's March 17th and the printer has now marked that. And so all these like arbitrary sort of just almost made up deadlines start to become real. Mm-hmm. Because other people are involved and other things are involved because you're thinking about the output instead of just making the artwork. You're making something, like Jake was saying earlier, make something, but think about where it's going to go and how it's going to fit into the world. And then the deadlines start to line up a little bit. And so that's what keeps me accountable a little bit is now the other people are involved. I'm starting to have, all over the place, whether it's production or creative input, help, critique groups. You start meeting with even just your critique group. When are you going to do this thing? Oh, I'm going to do it. And it's going to take me 3 months to make that. Okay. Well, now that's a deadline.
Yeah.
So they're arbitrary, but they become real.
I like that. I like both these. So Will's essentially like, the problem here is a little bit of mindset. Like, oh, I want to make it, but I don't know, how do I do it? I don't have the energy, whatever. And it's just like, you have to have that sort of vision of, when I leave this world, what will I have left behind? Will it be, you know, 500 editorial illustrations? Or will it be like this really cool book that you know, touches people's hearts? Or will it be, you know, this really cool thing that got people excited? So there's that. And then I like what Lee's saying, where it's like, essentially every independent creator has to wear two hats. And I'm pulling from like what happens in films. You essentially, if a film's going to get made, it needs a producer and a director, right? And one is a logistics person and one is a creative person. And the producer is the one that says, okay, I put together the team and I've put together the distributors and I got the money for the project. Now you have to make something really cool. And the director's like, great, thanks for putting this together. I'm going to make something really cool. And then boom, you know, 2 years later, a cool film comes out, right? Super simplified, but that's essentially it. And so for you, like, you have to wear that producer hat. And it takes practice, and it's hard to shift from I'm a creative person to now I'm like planning the logistics of everything. And so my advice there is, before the end of the year, plan to just finish a simple project, something digestible, like easily digestible, like a 30-page story. If I was a comic artist, it would be a 30-page comic, right? 30 pages, that's, you know, you could do 5 pages a month or something like that. If it was a children's, you know, if a children's book illustrator, I would say a personal children's book story. You know, if I was doing, like Lee said, a gallery show, it would be, you know, 20 pieces for this gallery show or something like, I don't know, 5 pieces for the gallery show or something, right? But figure out by the end of the year, I'm going to have this thing. And then do all the steps leading up to what do I have to do to have it finished by that? And what I like to do is I like to make things that I can sell because like the true, I think, measure of quality is if people will get rid of money for it, right? They'll exchange money for it. You can put stuff out there and people give you likes. Likes are cheap. Comments are cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, follows are cheap. But if they'll actually buy it, that says something. So, and I look at, like, I've got 500,000 Instagram followers. But how many people actually, like, support me on Kickstarter? 1,000? Maybe 2,000? Right. So those are, so that's where you kind of want to put something out there for sale and say, here's the thing that I made, because it forces you to actually finish something and put it out there. And so I would say, you know, we're at the beginning of this year here. There's still plenty of time. I would say plan on making something so that it is for sale and available to, like, ship out to people for Christmas. Hmm. You know, make something for people to give someone for Christmas to put under the tree or you know, something like that. So if you're going to do that, and if you can fund it yourself, you're in a good position. But if you need to go to Kickstarter, then you're probably going to want to do your Kickstarter in May or in July, you know?
But even if you end up in a non-commercial aspect of that, I do want to point to the logical project of Inktober started like that. I want to get better at ink. Here's my parameters. I'm going to do one new ink drawing every day using these materials for 30 days. You know what I mean? And that's fantastic. It's just an art goal. I mean, maybe something happened at the end of that. I don't know if there was a commercial angle with that first one that you did, or, hey, I just want to do my own illustrations. Now, here's things.
That first one, I put all those drawings together in a book.
Oh, did you? Okay. And that was sort of like, you knew that was going to happen?
That was sort of my, like, I want to, I had to justify also a little bit of, like, spending all my time on this. Because I have, and maybe I'm broken to some degree, but I have this philosophy and this hard and fast thing where you need to, like, you really need to work on making products and not just having projects. And I did a whole video on that years ago. And this is something that, like, my friend Jed, who's very big on this, is like, you having a project means there's no endpoint. There's no, like, there's no measure of, is it going good? Is it going bad? You know,
understandable. Like,
but when you have a product, you finish a thing and you put it out there, and do people want it? Yes, then it's successful. Do people not want it? Then you may have done something wrong, and it may not be the product itself. It may be all these other factors. Like, were you good at selling it? Were you good at? And so, you know, at some point in my life, I might, like, outgrow this and be like, I just want to, like, paint daisies and I don't care who buys them. Or the thing I actually am thinking about is I just want to make, like, dioramas, like cool little dioramas. For no other reason than
you do.
Maybe my grandkids just get a kick out of them, you know. So that's down the line. But for now, I'm really interested in making things that people want to own and support me through. And so that's why I, like, attach all these other things to it, like have a deadline for it, have a particular person in mind that wants to buy it, you know, have something that's designed to, like, fill a gap in the market. And maybe that gap is just, I need to be entertained in a particular way, you know, that I'm not being entertained with, you know? So I guess long story short is shift your mindset, put on your producer hat, and then give yourself, like, give yourself a finishable project by the end of the year and put it out in the world. And I think that might solve some of your problems. You could still do all these other freelance projects and things like that, but I would just set a goal for anybody who's in this position to try and do one personal project that you put out there a year. I should choose my word
and
better.
And the practical side of that too, like what Will's saying is you can't just keep taking all commercial projects and think you're going to add this on top. So it may mean a reduction of income if you say, okay, I'm going to say no to a few things, which means you may have to reduce your expenses. And so think about how that plays into everything, how much rent you have to pay, how much monthly, how much do you have to earn? If it's less, that means you can take less. That means you can make more things.
And I think that's it for this episode. I will add on to that. Like, with the way things are going in the world, your best bet right now is to buy some sort of muscle car and learn how to weld and just add spikes to it. You know, chains dangling from behind it.
The snow plow, you know, the wedge the snow plow in the front.
Wedge in the front. I think that's probably your best use of time.
We did as a group. As a group, we did all agree on that the snow plow is the best zombie apocalypse car.
Yeah.
To have.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or maybe like a bulldozer. But they're so slow, aren't they?
And they got the curve in the front, so you're going to capture a lot of that stuff in there.
Oh, yeah, you just need to, like...
You just want to clear it, like a...
Yeah, you
like
want
the zombie plow. Like, the zombie plow.
All right, let's... All right, should we tell people that we're going to come... That we're going to be weekly? Are we already weekly?
Yeah, we've been weekly. Been weekly by now.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, everybody, thank you for joining us. 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. So your hosts today have been Will Terry, Lee White, and Jake Parker. Will Terry can be found at willterry.com, and you can find him on Instagram at willterryart. Do you even post on there anymore, Will?
I plan to,
okay. Lee White can be found at leewhiteillustration.com and at Lee White Illo on Instagram. And I can be found at mrjakeparker.com and at Jake Parker on YouTube. Podcast is produced by Daniel Tu. He's our editor and kind of keeps things running here. Daniel2.co is his website, and Tu is spelled T-U. Special thanks to our SVS production manager, David Bro, for all he does to make sure this thing gets going. Special thanks to Austin Shirtliff, our community manager and producer here at SVS Learn. Thank you to Lily Camille for our show notes, and a special thank you to our admin person, Lisa Fott. So there we go, and we will see you guys next episode. Put your headphones down and go draw something.